Morning, all. The first case for argument is Smith versus City of Chicago.
Good morning. May it please the court. The district court ruled that it was irrational for the city to refuse to fund an attack against its own ordinance. This morning I will explain why it was absolutely rational to limit funding to the defense of the ordinance while not funding the attack. I will also explain why the First Amendment does not provide an alternative ground to affirm the district court's judgment. On the propriety of the remedy ordered, the reparative injunction, we will rest on our briefs. Under the district court's findings, the city refused to pay the plaintiff's legal expenses because they opposed the referendum map, a city ordinance. This was a wholly rational basis on which to deny the payment. The city had a legitimate interest both in defending its ordinance and in not subsidizing litigation against itself. Such subsidies would only encourage claims against the city, causing it to expend funds on its own defense and put city ordinances and other city policies at risk. A funding decision that refuses to pay those legal expenses must be rationally related to these interests. The payments that were made in the Rhodey litigation do not bind the city to fund the attack of the remap ordinance by these plaintiffs. Rhodey was a completely different situation. For starters, no aldermen whose expenses were paid in Rhodey were trying to invalidate a city ordinance. And furthermore, at issue were the very core internal procedures and operations of city council. Nobody could get anything done. The most basic things were unclear. How to vote, how to pass a law was in question. If the mayor could cast a tie-breaking vote was a question raised in those cases. The city council simply could not get anything done. In those cases, were decided on a highly expedited basis, probably just for that reason. Under these circumstances, the city had an interest in getting the matter resolved in order to get on with city business, and funding both sides of the litigation would surely advance that purpose. Finally, even if the circumstances were comparable to Rhodey, it wouldn't matter. And that is because there is no principle of estoppel under the Equal Protection Clause that would forever bind the city to continue to make pay a subsidy that it once provided. At worst, if the payment decision in Rhodey was improvident, the city should surely not be bound forevermore to continue making improvident payments. Otherwise, there would be no end to this. It would go on forever. The city would always be required to continue to make such payment, subsidizing litigation against it.
Isn't that, in fact, the general legal rule that applies here? You can't get estoppel against the government because of a past decision of a municipal officer?
Well, certainly that would come into play, Your Honor. The plaintiffs certainly have cited no case indicating that the city could not ever extract itself from a decision it once made that was later determined to be a mistake or improvident. But again, this is all if the Rhodey cases are indistinguishable, and of course they are not. The plaintiff's First Amendment claim suffers from the same problems as their equal protection claim. The city was a defendant in litigation. It was itself speaking in favor of the redistricting ordinance. Paying the expenses of the defendant aldermen furthered the city's position because those aldermen were taking the same position in favor of the ordinance. Paying the expenses of the plaintiffs who were attacking the ordinance would only undermine the city's message. When the government is the speaker, it may control the message without violating the First Amendment. If there are no further questions, I will reserve the remainder of my time for the rebuttal.
I have one more question, yes, Counsel. The ordinance that has been invoked here is this Section 2-152-170, which provides for reimbursement of attorney's fees or appointment of counsel at the city's expense.
Correct.
Where municipal officers or officials are sued, or there are actions instituted against them, and they are forced to defend
Correct.
Either their own actions or the city's actions in court. Is there any other legal authority for the payment of this fee claim apart from this statute or this ordinance? Or is this the only one that's in play in this lawsuit?
Well, Your Honor, the district court suggested that there might be other sources of funding, but the finding below was that the ordinance was no bar to payment. So implicit in that is that the city could find some other way to pay for the legal expenses of persons if it wanted to.
Well, what would that be? There has to be some ordinance or some law that permits the city to pay this claim. It can't just do it as an act of grace.
I don't know the answer to that. Perhaps the by resolution, as in Rhodey, they were paid by a resolution of the city council. Perhaps that method or some other.
The notoriously thoughtful group, too.
The council in the Rhodey cases did agree to pay both sides of the litigation act case by resolution, and perhaps the council could appropriate funds in that way or some other way. The plaintiffs have pointed to certain items in the appropriations. However, I'm not aware of how they would be able to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Wright.
Thank you.
Mr. Block.
May it please the court, my name is Jack Block. I represent the plaintiff appellees. If I could respond to Your Honor's question, in the REMAP cases, the three underlying cases, in what we're calling the administration aldermen, the predominantly white aldermen, they weren't paid under 2-152-170. They were paid from a number of line items out of the city budget. So when Alderman Burke wrote his three letters to the plaintiff saying that the only authority that he was aware of to pay the fees of those against whom claims had been brought, he at the same time was paying his own group out of different line items. So that's
pursuant to what authority?
I don't know to what extent there was any other authority other than Alderman Burke was the head of the Finance Committee, and he was making these unilateral decisions as to who was going to be paid. And in these instances, he consistently paid his own group of aldermen, whether they were plaintiffs, defendants, interveners, or whether or not they came within the statute. And based upon that payment procedure, that's how Alderman Burke was paying these fees. He wasn't limited to 152-170. And the point that was made by the opposition aldermen were, Alderman Burke, if you're paying your own group out of these line items, you should be able to pay us out of these line items. And that was the discriminatory decision that was made by Alderman Burke. 152-170 provides that you can pay for attorneys where an action is brought against the city or the official. In this instance, Alderman Burke's group, the majority aldermen, they were interveners in the case, and therefore the actions had not been brought against them. They voluntarily participated in these lawsuits.
Oh, I understand that, but they voluntarily participated and intervened as defendants, not plaintiffs, and they did so to defend the city's REMAP ordinance, which arguably falls within the authority of this ordinance, whereas your claim doesn't.
Well,
under any construction, even the broadest construction of this ordinance, your claim doesn't fall within it.
I beg to differ, Your Honor. What the ordinance provides is that fees can be paid for attorneys that are appointed for actions that are brought against a defendant. That's what it says. When you're an intervener and a voluntary participant, the action has not been brought against you. The administration aldermen were not defendants other than originally in the Barnett case. In the Smith case, they voluntarily participated, and in the Bonilla case, they voluntarily participated. They were not, under any circumstances, officials where the actions were brought against them. And that was one of the points that the court below indicated. If you're going to follow 2-152-170, How in the world can you be paying the administration alderman's fees? In addition, if you look at what happened in the Rohde case, Alderman Burke, again, unilaterally decided to pay his own lawyers, even though they were plaintiffs. And in an earlier argument by the city, they said, well, that was paid by consensus, but that's not what the facts show in this case. In Rohde 2, the fees were paid.
Before you get into a discussion of the facts and whether they're comparable or not, why is that case even relevant here?
The reason it's relevant, Your Honor, is because there was a finding that the Rohde plaintiffs and the plaintiffs here were similarly situated. In both instances, you had groups of aldermen that brought suits against the city administration, and therefore they're in exactly the same situation with respect to the one issue that's relevant here, where the city says we don't pay plaintiffs. We don't pay plaintiffs. We're not going to pay you, opposition aldermen, because you're plaintiffs. But in the Rohde case, that's exactly what happened. Alderman Burke and his group sued the city over some resolutions in the city council. Resolutions were involved in Rohde. Ordinances were involved in the remap cases. And Alderman Burke said those are the two ways that the city council conducts business. They're basically the same. These are virtually identical cases where groups of aldermen were at odds, divided on racial basis, where the key fact here is that Alderman Burke made the decision in both instances to pay the fees of...
But the general rule is that a legislative decision of a prior legislative body, and he was acting in that capacity, I assume, as chairman of the Finance Committee, does not bind a subsequent legislative body. You can't get estoppel against the government on that basis. Maybe that prior decision was completely renegade and should not have been made, but that does not bind the city forever. And so I don't see the relevance of what happened in the Rohde case to this case.
Your Honor, the issue is not whether there's estoppel or bind it together. The issue here is whether or not the two groups were similarly situated.
But that lawsuit has nothing to do with this one.
Your Honor,
your claim is that one group of aldermen in this case was treated differently than your group of aldermen, and what happened long ago is completely irrelevant.
Your Honor, that wasn't our claim. Our claim was that the plaintiffs, the opposition aldermen, were similarly situated to the Rohde aldermen, where Alderman Burke was part of that group. And Alderman Burke made decisions as to how he was going to make payments. And Alderman Burke decided that his policy is he's always going to pay the attorney's fees of his group.
Right, but you're missing my point, counsel. His policy cannot bind the city forever. And so if he has that policy, it's irrelevant to your claim here.
Your Honor,
His past decisions, whether right or wrong, whether similarly situated to your clients or not, are completely irrelevant to this claim.
Well, in this instance, where you have an individual who is part of a group that is a stakeholder in the litigation, who was a party to the litigation, and part of that group that was involved in the litigation, and he makes inconsistent decisions where he's always favoring his group, that's not a legitimate government action. And the city, to the extent, the city never said that it made a mistake back during the Rohde cases.
That doesn't matter either. I don't see why the city has to admit a previous error.
Well, again, Your Honor, this is an instance where you have one individual who is making inconsistent decisions and always favoring his own group and doing that inconsistent with the ordinances that was before the city. In this instance, Alderman Burke paid his own group even though they were voluntary participants. And this idea of subsidy is really a red herring. This wasn't favoring a city, the city's position at all. The opposition aldermen, strike that, the administration aldermen intervened in the remap cases. Their motions to intervene say they wanted to be before the court because their position was not being represented by the city. They wanted to be in there to protect their wards. That's private speech. That's not government speech. And under those...
Well, is it not true that they were defending the remap plan that was adopted in the referendum and became binding law?
What they were doing was protecting their own wards, and that's why they were before the court. That's set forth in their
petition.
That's
not the question that I asked. Were they defending the remap plan that had been adopted by the referendum and was, in fact, the law?
They were aligned with the city.
Yes. Okay.
So
they were in
defense. Answer to her question, yes or no?
Yes.
Well,
it
takes a hard way to get to that, but yes is an easy answer.
Thank you, Your Honor. But what their motions to intervene said was the city cannot adequately present our position as aldermen. We want to be before this court so that we can protect our own interests, our wards. In fact, Alderman Burke testified that the reason he wanted to be in the lawsuit was so that he could present arguments that countered the opposition alderman. He wanted to be in the lawsuit to protect his wards. That's private speech. That's not government speech. And the Johann case that's cited by the city indicates that that has nothing to do with subsidies. This is an instance where you had two groups of aldermen, and they were before the court, and what the city decided was we were going to spend $16 million for the majority aldermen who were there protecting their wards, and we weren't going to pay the same amount to the opposition aldermen, even though the policy in the city in the past was to pay plaintiffs.
I have a question about standing.
Yes, Your Honor.
As I understand it, the fees that are at issue here, it's about $260,000, something like that.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's largely composed of expert witness fees, is that right? That were incurred and not covered in the fee-shifting award in the underlying litigation?
Yes, Your Honor.
And those fees, those expert witness fees, were paid by the lawyers in question, not by the aldermen?
That's correct,
Who are
Your
the
Honor.
Plaintiffs here?
That's correct, Your
so
Honor.
So what is the injury?
The injury here, as found by the court below, is really...
No, we're not talking about fact-finding. I'm talking about injury in fact, which is the legal question for standing purposes.
The injury in fact was the denial of equal protection and having to take extraordinary measures to remedy the violation consistent with the Sherwin case and the Flores case. Those found that if you have to take extraordinary measures to remedy a violation, that's the injury.
What extraordinary measures here? They're not paying these fees, are they?
The extraordinary measures in this case was having to defend a lawsuit against 59 lawyers.
That's bootstrapping, counsel. You're trying to refer back to the injury that was litigated and that you successfully vindicated. I'm talking about the injury in this lawsuit, which is all about fees.
Okay. And also, Your Honor, having to pursue that redress in this court. And there are cases that hold that if you have to pursue separate litigation in order to recover, that's an injury and provides standing.
Why isn't this just a suit for money damages?
It's not a suit for money damages because the money wasn't paid. And what is involved here is equal treatment. Both sides should be treated equally. The money paid by the city went directly to the lawyers for the administration aldermen. Here, the money will be paid in exactly the same way.
So the lawyers are the real party in interest, not the aldermen.
The aldermen who were injured by denial of equal treatment are seeking the same remedy and the same payment.
Well, that gets back to my question. How are they injured? Because they haven't been required to pay these fees.
They were injured because they were denied equal treatment as part of the underlying litigation.
But what harm did they suffer if they haven't been required to pay the fees? The attorneys haven't sued them for recovery of the money, right?
That's correct. But under the circumstances, what the cases provide, that if you have to pursue for a constitutional violation of equal protection, if you have to pursue extraordinary remedies, here, having to pursue this, plus they were put at a competitive disadvantage in the litigation itself, Your Honor, because they were overwhelmed by a juggernaut of 50 lawyers putting in 42,000 hours over 8 years. And under those circumstances where they had to resist that kind of litigation, the courts hold that that's an injury, you have standing, and you're entitled to a recovery. Um, If the court has no further questions.
Do you want to just take a second, Mr. Block, and address the city's challenge to the factual differences in Rohde and this case? That is, the mayor versus the city as a defendant, and whether that plays out in some way.
Okay. Your Honor, the similarities between the two cases are, first and foremost, there were plaintiffs suing in both instances. And as Judge Plunkett ruled, under those circumstances, that's the issue. The city says we aren't going to ever pay plaintiffs, and that's exactly what they did. So that's the key fact. The additional facts that are similar are you had two groups of aldermen that were part of that divided under along racial lines. You had Alderman Burke in both instances making the decision as to who would be paid, and in both instances they were brought against the city or the city administration. That's not and those are the factors which show that those two cases are virtually identical.
Is there any limiting principle involved here? If we had, just to get away from this case, perhaps create another hypothetical case, where you had a significant body of aldermen on one side and a single alderman on the other. Would this case, if your position were to prevail, provide that in almost every instance, if there's a funding of any group, that any single alderman challenging could obtain relief by way of attorney's fees?
Yeah. Your Honor, the answer is no, not where it's brought by a single alderman, a class of one type case. This case is unique because you have two groups of aldermen. One group was paid by the city and wasn't. One wasn't.
No, I'm aware of that.
And so it could not be precedent for an individual, would not be precedent, and these cases are totally distinguishable.
How about two aldermen?
No. No. You have to have two groups of aldermen that are similarly situated.
Two is a group. Two can be a group.
Well, that's true, Your Honor, but they can't be similarly situated. That's the criteria here in terms of the difference. This is not being pursued as a class of one case and would not create any precedent for those kind of cases whatsoever.
Right.
Thank you,
Your Honor. Thanks, Block. Direct me.
Two quick points for rebuttal, Your Honors. Just want to point out that this morning counsel has put his argument in the same mistaken terms as they put the argument in the brief, in terms of the payment decision is made depending on an allegiance to Alderman Burke. That is not the finding, and leaving aside whether the district court should even have engaged in any fact-finding, the finding was that decision was made because the alderman opposed the referendum map, not for any other reason. What was not said this morning is, in answer to Judge Sykes' question, what the source in the municipal code is for this funding. And, in fact, it is not surprising that there is no explicit authority in the municipal code to pay plaintiffs or those who attack municipal ordinances. That would be irrational and counterproductive to pay people to sue you. That would be completely irrational. On the finding here, we did not pay because the plaintiffs were attacking the ordinance. It is very clear why they were not paid.
Thank you. Thanks to all counsel, and the case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to the second case.